In the studio tonight, we have with us Greg Shapiro, who is co-host and music director of Windy City Radio in Chicago, and he also is a journalist who writes reviews of GLBT music for about a dozen publications. Welcome, Greg.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me, JD.
How many publications are you carrying?
Give or take one or two, but it's about a dozen total.
Including Outsmart in Houston.
Outsmart in Houston, yeah. Absolutely. So,
am I begging the question, what brings you to Houston?
I'm trying to escape from the cold in Chicago. So I'm stopping here. I've got some family here. I'm grateful for putting me up for a couple days. And I'm meeting with some of my editors along. I'm taking a road trip to California and meeting with my editors along the way. So this was one of the stops along the way.
Greg is one of my queer media cohorts, so we've been gabbing for about 3 hours, so I hope we haven't run out.
No, I think it's so exciting to meet somebody who's as thrilled by this music as I am. It really is.
Okay, one of the things I didn't want to ask you before was, when you get a CD to review and you just don't like it, what's your philosophy on how to handle that?
Well, you know, it's one of those situations that I get a lot, especially when, specifically for queer music, a lot of it is really small, independent artists. They're making them at home or on a very small budget. And my feeling is that if it's not sort of up to par, it's easier for me just not to write about it at all than to write something negative. I have no qualms about writing negative things about Madonna Louise Veronica Ciccone and her ilk. But, because she can take it. She's thick-skinned. Mm-hmm. She's got it, no problem with that.
There was a review a couple months ago on Ari Gold's new CD, and the reviewer just ripped it in a very mean-spirited, and I almost called them because I couldn't see any point to that.
Right, there's no point, and the thing is, when there's something that's indie that needs to be heard, the whole point is getting the word out about the indie artists, whether it's in print, whether it's on radio. So if it's not worth writing about, don't write about it. But if it's good, you got to make people aware of it, and I find any way possible. Again, radio, magazines, newspapers, that's my job to do that.
But you wrote about the latest Alex Olson.
I did write about the latest Alex Olson, and I think I found something nice to say in the review. It's not here in front of me, so I can't really defend it. I don't necessarily want to pick on Alex herself.
For people who don't know the name,
Alex Olson's the spoken word artist.
Right, and her first CD was, I think, stellar. Very cutting edge.
I think, what did I say? We already have an Ani DeFranco. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Yes, that's right. Been there, done that.
For me, the Indigo Girls are a great example of a queer group that have a lot of imitators. And the thing is, innovate, don't imitate. And that's sort of the philosophy that I take. So with Alex, I feel like not enough innovation. I'm saying this and she's going to come beat me up. But
She could.
I mean, I've even seen her perform live. And I don't know. I think with that kind of spoken word stuff, I have lots of issues with that. So, and I don't think we've got the time to go into that. But does that answer your question?
Well, kind of, yeah. Have you found that some of your reviews work better in different parts of the country than others?
No, I think that I try to keep it, you know, I have this Midwestern voice, I think, when I speak and when I write. There's sort of a Midwestern quality to it. So that's kind of that friendly, you know, let's go milk a cow kind of thing. And so,
so you don't tailor it to the publication, really?
I mean, a publication I write for in New York, I might do a few more sort of like dance-related reviews. Mm-hmm. But for my general column that goes out to the other publications, I do these themed columns. For example, the column that's in the current issue of Outsmart is about the multiple releases by queer artists. Throughout the year, I was writing these sort of massive CD review columns because there were so much material released just in 2003 alone. I'm estimating well over 100 CDs by queer artists.
Do you feel like you're doing injustice now? Because, like, you covered a lot of artists in your last column.
Well, when something really, like, sets me off, I can talk about it for hours. So I try to, you know, limit the, you know, a paragraph for each thing. And if something doesn't necessarily excite me, but might excite somebody else, I still feel like it's my job to at least give it a plug, give it a mention, because I know there's somebody out there who's going to like something.
And you paused during your interview to kind of laud Deirdre McCalla.
Oh, yes.
So that made you stop and throw some praise in the air, right?
Truly a legend, and it's what more people knew about some of these. And then she's somebody that, you know, I think has a decent sized following. But there are so many more people who could know about her. Young people could benefit from hearing her. I feel like I'm like 100 years old. The young people would really benefit.
She'll be one of my interviews on Queer Music Heritage in 2 weeks. So
she's
delighted
really
to
terrific,
her.
Really terrific, and exciting history. I mean, she's part of the heritage.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that begs the next question. As you're going through and doing this, have you ever had, you know, been surprised? You know, you were joking around about you're going to get beat up, but I mean, have you ever, and I see this with JD, you know, the appreciation, you know, kind of from the artists, I mean, the way they feel about it.
Absolutely. Whether it's, you know, if I do an interview and JD and I are talking about this a little before, and then the person makes a comment during the interview, like, you know, you got it right. They're like, you're asking the best. Like, I just interviewed this guy, Steven Lutbach, who's a New York singer-songwriter guy. And before he'd answer every question, he would say, Greg, that's a really good question. And, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. It's stuff that I want to know. I think the people want to know. So I ask the stuff that speaks to me. So when you get that kind of interaction, like in an interview, or then there's a guy who's in this, again, an outsmart, Lamont Rigel, who's a singer-songwriter in San Francisco, who part of my job, I feel, after a review runs, I let everybody know. If it's the artist, the record label, the PR firm, you sent it to me. I want you to see proof that I wrote about it, so I contact everybody as soon as something runs, and I'll get a thank you here and there from the PR, from the record label, but the artists take the time to say, dude, thank you for the review. You really, I mean, and this review, this particular column.
They're hungry for exposure.
I know.
They're not played on commercial radio.
Right. And it's a pleasure to see that they're, you know, that they like the
reviews.
They're
not in People magazine.
Right. And you actually listen to their work, which was a whole other topic we got off on.
Again, that's so much my job.
I know, but you know, a lot of people don't. I mean, they read the liner notes
It says here, this is a good folk album.
Yeah.
I know, but it might not be a good folk album. Here's the thing. My name is attached to it, to the review. So if I'm going to say it's good, it has to be good. I have to think it's good. And, you know, I would say I listen to everything at least once straight through, and then I'll go back and I'll pick out things that really stick out for me. And that's, I think, if you read one of my reviews, you'll see, there's certain songs I'll mention that stand out. But, yeah, it's too important. My name, my reputation is too important to just guess on something.
Have you done any reviews that later you say, God, was I wrong about that?
God, that would mean I'd have to admit I was wrong about something. Do you have another question?
We have time.
Not very often. I have to feel
maybe your appreciation grew afterwards.
Oh, if a CD that I gave a bad review to that,
or neutral.
Oh,
I was frankly lukewarm about Jay Spears' CD, and it grew and grew on me.
And then did you also get a chance to see him live too?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing, is that sometimes it's hard.
Well, that always amplifies it.
Oh,
and sometimes it's hard to separate seeing them live from hearing them, because you tend to put more into the disc than might really be there.
Right. I wish that I had more time for things to grow on me, but I don't. So
me too.
I've got to listen to it, and I have to love it or like it or lump it, you know, send it packing.
Any favorite interviews?
Now,
you do music interviews, you do author interviews, you do television, film?
Film and theater.
How about a music one?
A music one. There are people, I'm really lucky I've been able to interview several artists more than once. Cyndi Lauper is always a joy. Melissa Etheridge is becoming more of a joy. That's why I just interviewed her for the third time for her new CD. And
now, are these phone interviews or live?
Those two were phone, but oftentimes stuff is live. Are you talking about queer artists, or are you talking about... Like, I just recently interviewed Craig Lucas, the writer. He's a screenwriter, and he wrote the play Prelude to a Kiss. He wrote the screenplay for Longtime Companion, and he was in Chicago. They're preparing rehearsals for his new musical. And I got to sit down across the table from Craig Lucas and talk to him. And that's one of my more memorable recent ones. It was really exciting. And I also interviewed Mandy Moore in person a few weeks ago. So I said,
okay, that's just not going to impress.
It's a gamut. Yeah. I mean, it's everything.
How about a TV
but now
movie
the guy
person?
That she co-stars with in her new movie.
Oh, I've seen the clips.
Matthew Good. Oh, too good to be true. He looks like a young Rupert Everett. He's absolutely beautiful, and he's just the sweetest guy. He was there also in person for the interview.
He's English?
He's English, mm-hmm. And he's dreamy and real cool. I mean, there's a scene, and it's a sort of a mediocre movie, but there's a scene in the movie where Mandy Moore's character is in a hug with this other guy that they meet on this trip in Europe, and the other guy sort of summons the Matthew Good character over, and he says something to him about... It's going to be a group hug, but he says, there's a chicky buffer here, because he's British. And I'd never heard the term chicky buffer before. And it turns out that the screenwriters made up the term, but I asked this guy, Matthew, the actor, if he had ever heard, as a straight man, have you ever heard the term chicky buffer? Meaning that if there's a woman involved in a hug between two men and a woman, the woman, it reduces
the
homoerotic tension. Oh, my God, there might be homoerotic tension. And he said he'd never heard it before. And he's like, I have no trouble hugging a mate. So, no.
That's, you know, Europe and England. That's different
right,
than America.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was two American guys who wrote the screenplay, so... did that answer the question?
I feel like
okay.
Any really terrible interviews?
Oh, God, yes. Yes. Two. I won't name either artist, but one was a transatlantic call, with a famous male British rocker, who had just released an album of, bi or gay, one of the two, and please don't try to make any guesses,
had just released a CD of
symphonic music. And so during the course of the interview, I mentioned that at the same time that this CD was coming out, Paul McCartney was also releasing a CD of symphonic music. And isn't it interesting that all of these male rockers are now releasing symphonic CDs? And his response was, I can't believe you mentioned that hack in an interview with me. You know, you do the old hit your head.
The hack Paul McCartney?
Paul McCartney's a hack. How did I not know
him? Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm such a fool. And I basically sort of, like, you know, the little cartoon character sort of running in place really fast and not moving. I was, like, scrambling, trying to save the interview. And I did. I said, I'm sorry. Let's move on to the next subject. And then the other sort of disaster was a multifaceted lesbian performer. She's worked in many genres, and she had just released her first CD. And an editor of mine, I guess for some reason, didn't trust me and provided me with a question that he wanted asked, which was, really, as far as I'm concerned, no, I can handle it on my end, thanks. And I asked the question, and the question related to another performer. And when I asked this question of this woman, she's like, oh, no. I cannot believe you just asked that question in an interview. This interview is about me. It's about me.
Oh, no.
Well, thank you for clarifying.
Thank you, Leah.
Ouch. Wow. I'm speechless. So I scrambled and I said, you know, I'll change it. We'll just move to the next question. And she said, I had prefaced the question by saying, this is not my question.
Uh-huh.
This is the question that my editor at this paper in this city wants me to ask you. So I had given her fair warning. And she says, oh no, you have that editor, you have him call me. Click. And I'm like, oh my God. I just I cried. And then I called the PR firm, and they said, oh, yeah, we've been waiting for you. I was like, whoa, dude, what did I do? I mean, we had had this great, up until that point, the first six
good
or seven
rapport,
questions
yeah.
were great. We're laughing. I'm calling her names. She's calling me names. We're clowning around. And I get to this, and so we kind of hashed it out, and then she called me back, and she apologized, and we picked up, and we eliminated that question altogether.
Oh, so you finished the interview.
I did finish the interview.
Really?
So both have been saved. Those two of us saved.
As you've been going along and meeting people, you know, varying degrees of fame and things, has it gotten easier? Do you still kind of get nervous?
Heart. No. My poor old heart. Just boom, boom. And it's like, you know.
It kind of stage fright.
It's like house music is playing in my chest.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, the fact that, you know, you're a GLBT person, GLBT associated, that doesn't seem to be a barrier, does it?
No, not at all. In fact, they want to talk to me. I'll give you an example. The Mandy Moore thing is just one small example. Actually, they know that's not going to work. There's another one. I'm trying to think of what it was a movie interview where they were going to force me to sit in a round table.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I'm not going to sit on a rock. Oh, I know what it was. It was Gina Gershon.
Uh-huh.
It was Gina Gershon for the movie Pray for Rock and Roll, where she plays the lesbian rocker. And they were going to put me in a round table. And I said, okay, no, I'm not going to sit in a room full of, you know, love them or leave them straight men, panting over Gina Gershon. I write for the gay press. I write for a number of gay and lesbian publications. I want to have a one-on-one interview with Gina Gershon. And I got a one-on-one interview with Gina Gershon. So, I think I lost. Did I get, am I close to the question?
Well, yeah, I guess that, you know, the fact that you don't feel like you have to hide who you are to get these, you know, top name kind of people.
And they do write,
that's changed, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and they do write for one mainstream publication. Just so I can have a little more exposure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they don't seem to care either.
No, not at all. And in fact, I mean, I think I bring a gay sensibility to the stuff I do for them anyway.
Uh-huh.
It's not detachable. It's not, yeah. No, it's there.
How long have you been writing the reviews?
10 years. About 10 years.
Has your approach changed?
It's funny, you were talking about doing interviews, and you're talking about the lengths of the interviews you've done. The one thing that has really changed is I keep an eye on the clock, and what's turned out is that the interview subjects appreciate it. I say, I need less than 15 minutes. Sometimes it's 15 minutes, sometimes it's 16 minutes. But the idea of transcribing anything longer than 16 minutes is really not a pleasant prospect. So I really try to keep it going, I keep it fast, I keep it short.
But if I'm talking to, for history purposes, I'm talking to Alex Dobkin, we go 45 minutes, I'm thrilled.
It was a decision that I had to make that I just can't do that. And because these people are really on the phone, a lot of these artists promoting CDs, they're on the phone calling people all day, or they're showing, or they're sitting through these in-person interviews.
And this is your business.
Right. So I need to, like, get it in, get it out, and bring it home. God, that sounded really obscene. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's a production line.
Yeah.
Next.
Right. Yeah. So
how many CDs have you reviewed?
Wow. I know that my CD collection at this point is over 10,000 CDs. But, I mean, there's CDs that I've bought and CDs that I've, you know. So, reviewed, maybe, I couldn't even guess. Thousands.
So, before 10 years ago, could you ever have envisioned yourself doing this kind of thing?
This is such a dream come true. My degree, I have a BFA in creative writing from Emerson College in Boston. So I have this whole life as a creative writer. I'm a published poet and fiction writer. Mm-hmm. I've got stuff in anthologies and textbooks.
You're professional queer now.
Exactly. Yes. Literary journals. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that for a long time after I graduated, well, for 10 years after graduating college. And then I would work, like, oh, God, I'd work 9-to-5 jobs. I'd work in banks and offices. Because for me, I was an artist, and I needed like a job to supplement my art. And then when I found out that you get paid for being a journalist, And I sort of stopped at, I'm an artiste. I can't be a journalist to, dude, I'm a journalist and I'm making money and, and I'm syndicated and my name's out there. So
my thing is anytime you can make a living doing the fun stuff, you're good to go.
And it's exhausting and I work at least a 60 hour week.
Yeah, but if you love it, it makes a difference.
I do.
Any question I should have asked you?
No, I think you did an excellent job.
Yeah, our editor didn't give him any, so.
Okay.
No, this has been fun.
We want to thank Greg Shapiro for stopping by today. And we want to get to one song I want to plug because one of my artist friends named Ellis is going to be appearing in Houston on the 21st at the Rhythm Room. That's 815 Washington. That's a week after next on a Wednesday, and I wanted to give you advance notice on that. Here's a song from one of her albums called Everything Is Real.